Your friend's son wants to be
Yeah, so an old friend of mine, you know, guy I grew up with, and, you know, we did all kind of crazy stuff together, and then later he joined law enforcement. You know, funny.
Was he an actor?
No, but he was kind of like clown in the group, you know, like the guy that would make everybody fall over laughing by just doing something outrageous.
Right.
You know, my path took me away from my local friends pretty early. I went to performing arts high school and sort of started begin to lose touch with some of these people.
Yeah.
But we sort of stayed in touch thanks to Facebook and stuff like that. He reached out to me because he had a son who I guess was interested in acting. And initially he said he was going to Texas A&M. And I was like, okay, I don't know.
His son was going to go to Texas A&M.
He was going to go to Texas A&M and study acting. And first of all, I'm like, I didn't know they had an acting program. But if you're going to go study acting, I wouldn't think Texas A&M would be the place to go do it. No. But I didn't know anything about the program. So I then spent a little time just trying to find out some information about the program. I found out I knew somebody who actually taught there, and I reached out to them. And I went through all of this to only find out at the end of it, oh, no, he's not going to Texas A&M. He's just hooked up with this talent agent that is in Bryant, Texas. Is that where Texas A&M is? Wherever Texas A&M is, yeah, that city.
Right.
Bryant. There's a talent agent there. And, you know, they do one of these LA trips that everybody does now. Oh. You know, let's take, you know, it's we're going to offer you a ton of acting instruction. And then we're going to do a 10-day LA trip. And we're going to introduce you to.
This smells bad already.
Oh, I mean, well, one, they just do this everywhere. There's nothing necessarily unique about this, although I think to these kids,
coming from Bryant is not as, you know, I mean, there's people doing this from New York, from LA, from Atlanta, from big entertaining cities.
So yeah.
When you land from Bryant, Texas, they're like, all right, let's get the shit kickers in. Let's get them out of here.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to remember is to put yourself in the shoes of some of these people who, right, might be seeing you or these agents. I mean, these kids think this idea that they, you know, that they're extremely special and that they're going to be, you know, it's like the, you know, Douglas, you know, you're finally going to get the attention you deserve.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You're going to be, you know what? You've got a lot of talent. I bet you could be discovered.
Right. Yeah. My mom said I could be an actor. Now I'm going to be an actor.
Right.
Right. Right. I'm just one person away from all of it being unlocked.
That's it. And, you know, you just need this one program from us, this talent agency, and that's it. You'll be off. We'll get you started on your career. You know, and in some respects, I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, it is a relationship business, right? So the more relationships you can build, the better you are at building them, the more friends you can make. I mean, the more people you're exposed to. I mean, that's great. But I'm wondering what they're paying for this, you know?
It's going to be, well, they're going to charge you. So if you break it down, they're going to charge you $500 minimum for the flight. They're going to charge you hotel. So you're probably looking at anywhere between $2,000 to $3,000 at minimum because
the minimum.
Because the guy who wants, whoever, it's a he or she, is going to want to make some money. And with the way the business model works, it says she's developed some relationships with a couple casting directors. I mean, that would be the key thing also to find out. Who are the casting directors? To look them up on IMDb. What have they been doing? Because it could be just like a bunch of casting associates from some big, massive agencies.
That's the party. Point when you go onto her website.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bunch of colorful language about how she's going to do all these things, but no specific names, which is a big red flag for me.
Oh, it's massive because then so she makes a cut, she charges them, she pays the casting directors, she books the room. And so these kids go in, they get quasi crap, you know, feedback, they get their headshots taken and nothing ever happens. And so it's unfortunate that people fall for this crap, but they, man, they're out there, man, because people are.
Well, I don't know if you've ever worked or taught for one of these modeling agencies? Because they're, you know, they're always looking for acting teachers.
No, I've never taught for a modeling agency, but, I mean, I know the business model because I fell prey to it, you know, 25 years ago, you know,
and
I was
Were you in the mall? Were you in the mall? Was it a mall call out where they got the table set up at the mall and they see you?
No. How was it? Where was I? I remember it was like in 1998, man. So it sounds so funny now saying 19 something because it feels like you're going to say 1955. But he
said as well be almost right.
I know. Yeah. I was really in shape, you know, when I was really, it was right when we did the play right before or after, I can't remember when we did, our play together up in,
the Return Engagements.
Yeah. And yeah, good play. I mean, that seriously, it was a good play.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
It was a good play. I think someone told me about it or something anyway. So I went up, I signed up, it was $1,500. Which was a lot of money back then for one person. And you had to bring, you brought some headshots and you went into, it was a hotel. I can't remember. It was the Hilton or something. And it was kind of like a mall, a big table. And you basically stood in line with like another thousand wannabe actors, models. And you went around in front of this table and you presented your headshot. They gave you feedback and you walked away. That was $1,500, dude. And I walked out of there going, I just got reamed. I walked straight on out and I was like, okay, I just got my first real lesson in the business of acting. You know, for people, I think for younger actors who want to, and I've shared this with some of the colleges that I've done my show at, and I've had kind of like acting workshops afterwards.
Yeah.
There's so much access today on the internet that, you don't need gatekeepers anymore. You know, I mean, there is a point when you need a casting director and you need an agent, but if you're a young actor, I mean, you can get on IMDb, look for every film that's being filmed and especially if you're in Bryan, Texas, in Austin and San Antonio, look up the producers, email them your stuff, say, hey, I want to be an extra. If you have any small lines, I would like to take part of it. You can, most of those guys even have their phone numbers on IMDb.
But Doug, I'm going to be discovered. I mean, I'm going to be discovered. I don't need to do any of that.
No, I know. What people want is people want the easy answer.
Right.
Like they don't want the work answer because, you know, no. Getting online and doing research and looking for producers and
emailing people yourself and all this stuff. That's why I get an agent, right? That's why I get an agent, right? Oh. They'll do all that stuff for me, right?
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they open gates for you, you know, and you develop good relationships.
Some of them do.
Yeah, some of them do. But I mean, if you're a younger actor, man, there's just so much more opportunity to get out there, scroll online and find producers. You know, you just don't. The workshop that should be happening in Bryant is showing people how to use IMDb.
Yeah.
That's the workshop that should be happening in Bryant.
No, it's very, you know, I used to teach when I was in Houston. I taught for a year or two at Page Parks. I don't know if that was the modeling agency they got back in the day. But, you know, very similar kind of approach. Hey, we're going to kind of set a table up at a mall. And, you know, if you have a good look, we'll, you know, kind of invite you in. And then we'll offer you... you know, we'll offer you some classes and, you know, if these things, oh yeah, of course. Yeah. You're paying for the classes, but if things go really well, you know, we also have a modeling agency. So if things go really well, maybe we'll accept you into the agency. We also have an acting program.
I mean, I always thought if I came out of Juilliard, I would be like, I kind of thought when I was younger, like that was it, right? You come out of Juilliard or, you know, one of these prestigious top notch graduate schools or undergraduate programs, you know, you're like set for life, you know, you're on the yellow brick road, you know, right. But you're not. Because
just at the starting position wearing some nicer clothes and you know, you have some slightly better skills when it comes to doing theater than other people do because you have better training. But
yeah, and you do have more opportunities. I mean, there are doors that open quickly for you. I mean, they have, you know, they have the showcase they do at Juilliard and at NYU, these really powerful showcases where, you know, William Morris comes to the showcase. I mean, big time. And people are discovered on these. But for the amount of people that are discovered in these showcases at the end of the year, there's like, you know, 80% who are not discovered. Right. And
well, I mean, what is even being discovered really even mean other than that you got an agent? I mean, you know, I mean, unless they immediately turn around and just put you in something where, your career is essentially made because of that role in that right. show that you're doing, whether that's theater or whether probably going to be filming.
But the thing for people to take away is that, I mean, that's how competitive the business is.
Right.
So
being an elite at Juilliard doesn't necessarily prepare you for that reality.
No, none of it. So the idea that some dude named Nikki or girl named Nikki is going to take you from Bryan, Texas out to LA and you're going to be discovered. When you have that perspective, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Now that seems like a crack of shit there. You know, I mean, you're better off grabbing $3,000 and producing a short film and start submitting it to festivals.
Yeah, amen. Amen to that. But I mean, a lot of these people don't have any training. I think that's the other thing. You know, you're talking
that goes into a different
people at the very beginning of training who have no training, who deer in the headlights, like, oh, I see a bright light. Oh, what's that? That could make me famous. And, you know, I was thinking long and hard about what I would say to this young man. And I kind of came back to the Stanislavski quote, right? Love the art in yourself, not yourself in the art. I mean, that's the most important thing, I would think.
Me and you, it is, because we care about the passion of acting. For how old is he?
He's 17, so he's a junior or senior in high school.
You know, so. I mean, this is the, you know, I've had people reach out to me, like, I've had a couple people reach out to me at this age, just like your friend has, you know. Hey, can you talk to my girlfriend's son who wants to get into acting? Hey, can you talk, you know, I haven't been the best with my own family when they've reached out wanting getting the business. And I've been negative to them.
Well, your son, wasn't your son just in your web series?
Well, yeah, no, I've brought him in. Right. But I mean, if he said, Dad, I want to be an actor. Yeah. I was like, okay, you need to learn 10 monologues. Like, so I would raise the bar right away. Right. I mean, my son, I have no intentions that he's going to be an actor. And I put him in my film mainly because I want to be able to look back at that film and say, there was my son at 10 years old, at 8 years old, you know, it's kind of like what Coppola does. Right. And that was the whole intention of it. Same with my little girl. But, you know, I've talked to younger actors, like my family, you know, I raised the bar so high before I really helped them because mm-hmm. I want to make sure that they understand that it's a lot of work. So I kind of deter people. Like I tell them the truth. You know, I say like, listen, it's fucking hard. Like you have no idea how hard. You need to learn, before I even give you any ideas, you need to learn 10 monologues. Come back to me when you learn 10 monologues, right? And people are like, okay, yeah. None. They don't ever do it. And I've talked to younger actors, just like you've done with your friend, same thing. And I've even sent them the monologues, like really good friends who've asked me about their son, sent them the monologues. Learn these 10 monologues. This will give you a wide range to audition. You need to have, you know, a repertoire of material that you can, you know, pop out. I mean, that really is how you start finding work, right? You know, here's a comedic play. I need to go audition, right? Here's a dramatic play. I need to go audition. Here's a Shakespearean play. I need to go audition. Here's a classical play. And you want to be able to grab, you want to be able, kind of like the way I talk about the solo show, be able to just to boom, you know, flip out material and do that in a high enough numbers quantity game that eventually you're going to get bookings, right? That eventually someone says, hey, and then you rinse and repeat, right? And they don't do it, man. They don't do it. And so
you think that they don't do it because they're deep down, they're really not interested in being actors, or because it's just too much work, or
both. I think it's they realize, oh, it's so much work. You know, they have this glorious idea where they think acting is being famous, not.
Well, you see the end result. It's like looking at a professional athlete where you just see LeBron dunking. You don't see all the hard work he put in to get to the point where he could, you know, do that effortlessly.
Exactly. Here's a great thing I heard. I heard Tony Gonzalez. You know who Tony Gonzalez is? He's a
Hall of Fame football player.
Tight end. Yeah, he's retired. Yeah. Tight end. You know, when he started playing, I heard him on a podcast, and he said when he started playing, he was really he was struggling really bad. I mean, a lot. I mean, he was really struggling. He says to the point where he was in tears that he was going to get cut. Mm. And this is a guy who was an All-American in high school and college. I believe he played for Wake Forest, which is a pretty big Division I school. And he's just like, he couldn't figure out, you know, what he started realizing is that he wasn't getting the reps that he really needed, that he got when he was in college. Like, you know, there's so many an offense in the pro level, there's such, you know, the reps go mostly to the quarterback, but they get, you know, they're not going to key in on a tight end and say, we're going to give you as many reps as you need to get good. That's not the way it works, right? He says he was getting maybe 10 throws at him, 10 in practice. That was in practice. So he couldn't get his skills any better. So he started started reading up on what Jerry Rice was doing. He started studying what all these great athletes were doing. And he talks about this, and he says he realized that Jerry Rice was catching something close to 300 balls a day. So he was like, how is he doing that? Like, there's no way they're throwing him 300 balls. Well, he realized he was practicing after. He was putting in a lot of extra time on his own to get those reps in. So when he got the reps in practice, he would be ready to go. And he did something where he talked about the numbers where he went from like catching, I don't know, something like 2,000 balls a year to catching 20,000 balls a year, right? Literally physically catching the ball. So he said it dramatically improved his game. All of a sudden, he became skillful at the craft that he was trying to perfect. And that's the point I think the younger actors don't realize that. You have to put in the work to be able to perform and be able to be a craftsman at the skill that you want to approach, right? So if you can't learn 10 monologues, how can you consistently audition for plays on a consistent basis, right? I mean, you have to be able to be flexible is the word I'm looking for. What, feasible? You know, what is it when your mind's really flexible?
Yeah, I think that's some sort of mental flexibility. I think mental
flexibility. Yeah. You got to be able to and endurance, right? You know, you've done regional theater where you've learned two whole Shakespearean plays, like in the old days, right? And you have to be able to retain that information.
We've both gone through training, so we understand that. You know, when you're first starting out in your training, you might live in the moment of that character, like 5 seconds, right? You might really be dropped in, be living in the moment 10 seconds out of that play. But by the time you get through training and you get into some sort of professional work, you know, that becomes more and more and more, right? And so perhaps you're not living in all of the moments of the play, but you're living in a lot of them, right? And I think that that's absolutely a process of repetition. You know, you repeat it, you think about it, I know if you have a good director or a good acting coach, they'll give you some things to think about for the next time that you do it. You think about it, you know, you think about, oh, what did I really live in? What was I kind of just kind of faking my way through?
And you know, what happens is when you work on your craft like that. So if let's say this is what would happen. Let's take the 17-year-old kid hypothetically, and let's say we are able to control his brain and control his actions. This is the first test. So let's say you say, hey, I need you to learn five monologues. And I think five is a fair number. You know, you got a comedic, you got a dramatic, I got a classical, and maybe two different in there that are kind of alternative, right? You know, two to swap it up, you know,
maybe. Show your range off a little bit.
Yeah.
What you perceive to be your range. Yeah.
And maybe even a crazy monologue. Sometimes it's always good to have something really wild.
Something out of the box, right? Something that shows you're totally different character.
You could be completely wrong for it, right? Because, I mean, you know this. How many times, I mean, I don't have an audition with monologues in a while now, but, you know, when you're a younger actor, you probably still do. You know, when you go and they say, hey, what else do you have? Right. I mean, that's a very common thing you'll get. Well, that's great. You know, you have something else, something different. You're like, yeah, I've got this piece that I've been working on. So he learns five monologues. Well, what happens is when an actor learns five monologues, he becomes better at what he does. And people are naturally attracted to people. It's in our DNA. You're naturally attracted to people who are improving in some way. You want to be around that person. And then what happens is it becomes kind of like, you know, a positive effect of a snowball rolling downhill where, okay, he's kind of good. I like being around this guy. More opportunities open up for you, right? Because now they're like, oh, he's pretty good. Let's give him this role. Let's give him this opportunity, right? And then someone talks about him. You know, yeah, he had a great audition. Because people want to be around. They want it. It's in our human A. You know, it comes into how we survive. You want to be around the person who can provide food for you. You don't want to be around the person who can't hunt worth a crap, right? Because that person is just about useless. right? And that simple
Danu's a team player who works well with the team and is, you know, but
I think more importantly, that can provide value, right? You could be the greatest actor. I mean, you could be the nicest guy in the world, but if you're just absolutely atrocious, can't learn your lines, not a good actor, you know, eventually.
Well, I'm just saying, let's say you're choosing between, as the casting your person, you're choosing between two actors of relatively the same ability, the same talent, but one is a dick and the other is super easy to work with. I mean, it's a no brainer. You're going to pick the guy that you think is easier to work with.
Yeah.
If they're relatively around the same talent, and I've even been in casting where, yeah, we pick somebody who perhaps was not as talented and obviously not as talented because they had a bad reputation as somebody who was difficult to work with, right, or just somebody who wouldn't work well with us, let's say.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You mesh with a person. There's a chemistry thing. But I think the point that I'm trying to land on is that if younger actors would work on their craft, mm-hmm. more opportunities would come to them.
Would come to them. People would be drawn to them as they're
drawn to them. So let's say he went to every crappy community theater in Bryan, Texas, which I have no idea how many there are. And let's say he's...
It can't be many.
Yeah, two, right? It can't be many. But let's say he's knocking them out of the park, right? And he gets cast, right? So now he's in a play in a crappy community theater, right? Well, now he has something to share, right, to someone around there, right? And then they say, you know what? I saw this kid in this crappy play and I think he would be great. Let's ask him if he wants to come out to Austin or somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Right? And you get more opportunities, right? But you have to put yourself out there. And I think younger actors miss that. You know, they don't take responsibility for themselves and say, what can I do personally to improve my game, right? You know, right. Reading a script, working on a monologue, working on a scene. You know, so many things you can do that will open doors for you that put the responsibility on you compared to some kid, which I've run into a lot of them, who they kind of half-ass whatever they're doing. They kind of perform it, but then they never work on their craft. They never learn another monologue. They don't ever put themselves out there. So what happens to that kid? He falls off. Because at the end of the day, you have to be able to put the responsibility on yourself. Even if this kid from Nikki went out with this company out to LA, and let's say someone said, you've got a great look, man. Man, what a great look you have. Can you move out here? Sure. Great. Let's get you auditioning. Mm-hmm. Now the truth gets revealed. And now the kid who has been working kind of like Matt Damon was when he was 17 is going to get the job. Right. And slowly but surely the opportunities start falling back because they realize great kid, good look, can't act. Right. And he's not improving. That's the thing. He's not improving, right? And that's where the rub is.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I think these people are going to treat this kid like the people when you went for your first audition you were talking about treated you. They're going to give you sort of an honest critique. They're going to give you some feedback, and they're going to get on to the next person.
Right.
And unless you're extremely talented.
Or extremely gorgeous.
Well, I would say a combination of those things. Right? You're very talented. You also have a great look. Yeah, you're going to do special things if you apply yourself, sure. But for the most of us, the rest of us, I mean, yeah, it takes just a grinding sort of continuance, right? We just don't give up.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's it, you know, and you never know when the opportunity is going to come, and you kind of realize that you're in it for yourself because
there's something intrinsically about it that you recognize that is a kind of your artistic soul, you know.
Well, for me personally, is I would die without it.
Yeah,
like I would die without it. Like if I wasn't acting, I would die without it. Like I would be doing cocaine. Like I would be doing crystal meth or something. I would be. it would be spiritual suicide to a point where I would be in a very not a good person to be around for my family, for my kids. For anybody, because I would be like, I basically committed spiritual suicide, right? Because I would never be able to look at a movie and think, oh, that was a great movie. And I think, man, I wish I was still doing that. I mean, I can't tell you how many people reach out to me Mm. I do the play and say, you're so blessed to be able to do what you're doing, you know? And I take that as a compliment when they see the play or when they see what projects I'm working on. But obviously, kind of like you said, the athlete, you only see the finished product. Right. You don't see the freaking ass smashing in my face that I've received in the past 20 years, you know? You know,
you don't see these guys. I mean, you hear about it because they love to talk about it. But if you're just watching it, you don't see getting up at 5 a.m. every day, putting in all this work. I mean, you just don't see it. You just see this beautifully finished product and you think, oh, I would love to do that. I would love to be able to be that guy or that girl.
You have to be able quickly, and I'm guilty of this as well. You know, I'm always thinking, how much more value can I provide my agents, right? Yeah. And so I'm constantly, and that's a really good message to keep to yourself. Like, if you can provide more value, you're going to be more useful as a talent, right? You know, if you can do multiple dialects, you're going to be more useful than the guy who can only do one dialect, right? There's more opportunities for you. So I'm always thinking, okay, I speak Spanish. I need to perfect my auditioning in Spanish, right? So I started speaking Spanish. I need to perfect my, you know, auditioning for TV, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you want to get to a place where you're practicing these very critical skills, which means that you provide value for someone, which means you're usable, right? Because at the end of the day, there's where, Dennis Rodman. I mean, Dennis Rodman's a great example. Couldn't shoot a lick, right? Right? He couldn't shoot a lick, but he provided a tremendous value to his team.
Right.
What was it? Rebounding. Right.
Right. And that's knowing he knew his lane. He knew himself. He knew this is my value. This is what I can give to.
That's a key point. He probably realized, I can't shoot a lick. I mean, there has to be, you know,
right.
Like, I'm not going to go audition for, you know, for Hamlet at the Public. Like, I just know, okay, I know where my ceilings are at, right? And I know, you know what, there's going to be other actors who are going to come in there and are going to nail it. And they're going to look like a Hamlet. They're going to have more training for that role. You realize, but I know where my value is, right? So there's got to be a point where Rodman thought, I can't shoot with a crap, but I know what I can do.
Know what I can do. Exactly.
I know what I can do.
Well, I think a lot of actors, well, a lot of people in a lot of fields are guilty of that, is that they just don't kind of know where the closest rung up that they can get to is, right? Like, I'm not going to go out for Hamlet at the Public. That's way up here. But I could go out for Hamlet at, you know, Hudson Valley Shake or something, right? Yeah. Something that is more, this is an attainable... Yeah, I could walk in the room with my skill set, with my looks, and I could get this, you know, that this isn't some pie in the sky, unattainable sort of thing. Because I think that, yeah, as a young actor, if that's what you were experiencing, like you were just talking about, oh, move out to LA, we'll send you on these auditions. And then you find out real quick that, oh, you don't really have the talent or the skill set to kind of compete in these auditions against other actors. And right. You very quickly lose interest because you're not getting anything, you know, you're going after part after part after part, whether it's film, commercial, TV, theater, you're not getting any of it. And I think that causes people to, oh, okay, well, I'm going to quit. I'm not really getting anything. And if they just kind of looked up and went, oh, you know, don't look so high, look right here, right in front of you. Like you were saying,
yeah.
Don't go out to LA, get something, the local theater in Bryan, Texas to hire you first. You know, that's what's available to you. You know,
And be ambitious. I mean, this doesn't mean you're not ambitious. Be ambitious. Try to be the best. I mean, that was the one thing that I always tried to do. You know, it's like, okay, I'm being cast in this play, but I'm going to do the very best as I can. And then I'm going to really try to promote myself and I'm going to do the really very best that I can in the next play. Right. I mean, I was always very ambitious and you have to have that, you know, competitive drive, but that doesn't mean if you get cast in something, you know, that you can't find value from it. Right. You know, I mean, I found tremendous value from return engagements, right? People came to saw that play. Opportunities open up from that play. Did I ever share you the story when I auditioned for, what's that play? It's all, nothing but black actors.
Oh, you did. Yeah, Top Dog Underdog. I think you did.
Top Dog Underdog. Yeah.
It's just two brothers. It's a great play. Great play, but yeah, they got to be black. Yeah, and you said you went in and you crashed the audition as a white guy.
Yeah, and I didn't pay attention, but I remember this black guy goes, "Good for you, man." I didn't realize what he meant, right? Until I realized what it was. Because I was so hungry when I came to New York, dude. I was just like, I was a machine. I was walking, auditioning. I mean, I was like, you know, what do you need? A chicken? What do you need? A lamb? I mean, I can do it all. I can bark. Right. I can be an alligator.
I can cook too, baby.
I can cook too, man. And so, and the cast, and now I understand why. He was like, he was pissed, right? But it was an equity union. It was an equity audition.
Oh, EPA. So he had no choice.
EPA. So he couldn't turn me away, right? So he had to watch me do my monologue, which not only was I wrong for the role because I was white, but probably because the monologue was so inappropriate because I had nothing. I mean, you know, you would have to do something from, you know, that was equivalent to the play, you know.
Yeah, today you would just be like, that is racist as hell, man. You get out of here. What are you doing with that?
Oh, yeah.
What's the matter?
Yeah. What's wrong? But what? You do have to have that mentality where I'm just, you know, you have to get almost, I don't know. You have, when you come to New York or, you know, at least New York, I can't really speak for LA because obviously I've never auditioned for LA. Mm-hmm. And I know LA is a little bit different because you have to drive and, you know, it's a little bit more challenging. But when you come to New York, I mean, you really have to get tunnel vision. Like, I mean, you have to get so tunnel vision where you're just going to audition, do crap plays, do crap films, audition, say no to parties, say no to events, stay here, don't travel, audition. Work on the weekends, work on, you know, do a crap project on New Year's Day. You know, you get, and that's because you have to create volume for yourself where things, you start getting traction in different things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a big, something you have that a lot of actors don't have. And I think it's perfect that you're doing the American Soldier play because that kind of soldier level of discipline.
Yeah.
You know, I think Stanislavski even said it in, you know, My Life in Art or An Actor Prepares or something, talking about how an actor has to have the same kind of iron discipline that a soldier does.
Right.
You know, and it's really true. And most actors don't have that to that degree. I mean, they have it, but they don't have that level of it. You know, they're actors. They're, you know, emotional feeling things. They, you know, they get upset by bad auditions and they get... You know, they get rattled, you know, when they don't do a good job and, you know, it's woe is me. I'm terrible at this. You know, they always need some coddling and some reassurance. No, you're good. You had a bad day. It's fine. We all do, you know, but don't worry about it. And I think that's the other thing too, is the more resilient you are about that kind of stuff, right? So what? So if I fell on my face, so what, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I farted during the audition. I was terrible. You know, and the easier that rolls off your back, the easier it is for you to
yeah, I mean, I always try to correlate everything to sports, you know, and I derive
good
a
job.
Lot.
You've been doing that pretty well. Yeah. What's that? Good job. Oh, good job today on that, by the way, correlating things to sports. We've gotten some – the Tony Gonzalez story, that was great. I love it. Yeah,
exactly. So, but, you know, if you throw – I had a bad audition a month and a half ago, I went in for some film, big casting director, it was a pretty decent sized role for some film. They're doing Ma Rainey's Bottom as a film. That was perfect for the role. I had just performed The American Soldier when I got the sides the day that I was performing, and I wasn't going to drive back the next day. And so then when I got the audition, I was in New Hampshire, which is about 2 hours, 3 hours away. And so I said, yeah. So I committed to the audition. So I drove back. So I learned my lines, I thought, on the drive home. And I felt pretty good about it. And I went in there and the casting director was just like, I had prepared, you know, I was preparing myself with someone to read back with me, right? Someone to actually read the lines with a little bit of emotion, not really acting with me, but just a little bit of emotion. And he had like four or five lines. He was doing like multiple characters and he would read his lines really fast, you know. He would just read them really fast and run them all together, and I couldn't tell who was talking, and he was reading so fast. And I was like, and it kind of threw me off, right? You know, and I got nervous, and then I got in my head, and I was tripping over myself. And then, so then I said, hey, can I start again? And she said, yeah, sure. So we started again, and he started talking again really fast, and I couldn't tell whose character was which, and he was talking really fast, and I was getting nervous again, and I was tripping all over myself again. I said, hey, sorry. Could we just start again, you know? Now I'm like, okay, Doug, what have you done to yourself? Now you've really put the spotlight on yourself. He goes, well, I don't have time for this. He goes, I can do it. So he walks out of the room. She walks out of the room, and he goes, okay, here we go again. And I obviously now I was more comfortable because I got, like, you know, this two rough goes at it, right? You know, and I got more into it, and I had a big monologue, you know, and I was starting to go into the monologue, and then I messed up again. I was really nervous now because I had stopped three times. I asked for a fourth time. I knew the lines, right? And I knew the scene. And like, I was like, I just need you to slow down. And on the fourth go, he slowed down.
Oh.
He started to slow down, and I got the scene out, right? Mm. Obviously not a good audition, but I got the scene out. He goes, oh yeah, that was much better. And I walked out going, oh my God, I just imploded in there, man. Just completely imploded. And you're going to have that. And that was with a big time film casting director, right? And you always feel as an actor, that's it. I'm ruined. I'll never work in this town again. I'm on the blacklist. It's going around right now. It's going around. Do not cast this actor.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, Douglas Terrell, and they're crossing your name out.
Yeah,
you know, just,
yeah. Oh, we heard about you. Thank you.
Yeah. You had a bad audition, didn't you?
Oh, it's been getting around. It was really.
Yeah, we heard about that audition.
Yeah. And you know, and that was actually the last film TV audition I've had. And you move on to it, and you just focus on the positive, you know, you focus on the stuff that you are doing. And
yeah, I mean, because you really don't, I mean, in a situation like that, you could go, okay, well, I mean, I had to stop and start three times, and I finally got it right on the fourth take, and okay, let's, you know, I had a bad audition. Other times, you know, you're just not sure. I didn't get it. And you start thinking about the audition, and, you know, it's probably good, but as long as you don't beat yourself up too much, you know, you could probably take some notes from that. Oh, you know what? I think I moved a little too much, right? I wasn't, you know, I just moved around in frame too much. And that was
I think where I am now, and I need to, and I'm not good with this, and I need to get better. And that last audition was me starting to 20 years now, starting to own the audition. Cause you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago, I would have just destroyed myself and walked out.
Right.
And I would have just said, okay, I just bombed that audition. Now I'm like, you know, what I should have even done, the note that I did take away is what I should have told the guy who's reading with me. Hey, can you please slow down a little bit? I'm having a hard time.
Right. Right from the beginning. Just right ask beginning. What you're asking, what you want. Right. Yeah. And just be nice about it. Right.
Yeah. I can't follow you. And you know, he's having trouble listening. Right. Cause then, it's your audition. Like, it's your audition. Like, there's no need. And Tim's talked about this. He says, you're not auditioning for the job. You're auditioning for your career, right? And he says, like, you're probably not going to get the role anyway, but control yourself, handle yourself in the auditioning room where people go, huh, I really like the way he handled the room. Like,
right. You
know, how he handled the room is just as valuable as how you do the material, right?
Oh, I mean, your own level of confidence, whether or not you crushed your material or not, I think is maybe the most important thing.
It is.
You know, do you walk in? Do you seem confident? Are you relaxed in the space?
Yeah.
You know, do you move freely in the space as if it were your own? You know, you come in, you seem like you're at home. You know, inside you may be freaking out, but externally, you know, you've got this sort of demeanor of confidence. I mean, that goes a long way. I mean, obviously, if you're terrible in the audition, that may ruin that. But, you know, I may think to myself, well, you know, they're not right for this, but wow, I really like this person. I like this actor. I just like how they carry themselves, you know?
It's a hard thing to do, man. I mean, for some people, it comes really natural. I think I'm getting to the point now where this is it.
I've been stripped away of it all. I'm just going to come in and be authentically me.
And
like you said, this is my audition.
And I was like, I am not leaving this room until I do the scene the way I want to do it. I still didn't do it, but the lesson there, and it's hard. You just have to have that confidence. And it's good that, you know, we're sharing that, because I think younger actors, especially in film and TV, you know, just, yeah, control the room, you know, be respectful, you know, don't be a butthole.
But I think it's that like that confidence thing where, you know, no matter what happens, it's going to be okay. You know, you have a bad day, it's okay. You fall on your face, it's okay. You
guess what? At the end of the day, we're not curing cancer.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. You know, you're terrified, that's fine. You're nervous, that's fine too. It's all okay. And I think the more you can just have acceptance with whatever state you're in, you know, I think that's important. Because everybody, oh, I shouldn't have been this, I shouldn't have been that, I shouldn't have been nervous, I was all in my head. It's like, that's fine. Yeah, just accept it. Next time you'll do better.
Well, it's like, you know? I mean, I think David Mamet talked about this. He said that, I'm trying to remember what he said, but he talked, his theory on acting, I mean, I personally don't agree with it, but it's an
just say the words. I thought that was Mamet's theory.
Yeah, no, he was just saying the words. He says, if you audition and then you, like someone gives you a piece of direction, not asking to do the scene again is not going to make it any better. Like, I forgot. It's almost, but it is. For his whole point of acting is that just come in, say the words, and leave. Like, you know, you don't need to act. You don't need to, you know, go into any Meisner. You don't need to, who the character is, what he wants, what is through line. Just say the words and get the fuck out. You know, and there's a level of, you know, in film and TV, I would say there's a level of truth to that, you know.
Oh, 100%.
The level of truth to that, right?
Just say the words. Just say, I mean, I told you that thing. Brandon said that Eastwood said to Costner on the set of A Perfect World. Did I tell you that?
No.
So Brandon's on the set of A Perfect World, and he said it was golden hour, and they're trying to shoot the scene, and Costner is, you know, I don't know, he's having problems. He's in his head, you know, I don't know what the scene's about. You know, it's what he was saying on set. I don't know what this is about. And so finally, apparently Eastwood cleared the set and said, you want to know what the scene's about? I say these words to you, you say some words to me. Can we shoot this thing?
Perfect World. What movie is that? The baseball movie?
No, it's, I think Costner is a serial killer in it. He's on the lam or something. And yeah, I it's been a while. I can't remember. I think he's a killer in it. But it's like that. It's like, yeah. In a film, you know, what we have? I got five lines I got to say to you in this scene, four lines or something. It's like, just say the lines. Just say the lines. Do you know them?
Yeah. Oh, that's,
Do you know them?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times that simple thing has just derailed, particularly not A grade film, but, you know, you're getting out of B, C, D level of independent film where nobody just knows their fucking lines. Nobody knows their lines. I'm like, how are we supposed to do this if none of us know, I don't know your lines. You don't know your lines.
I did a film and I learned a great lesson.
I have no idea what you're about to say. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's going to this. Guy who was a short film, they drove us up to upstate New York, me and this other actor, shot on a red camera, great freaking set. It was in this half abandoned kind of church that was decrepited with stones. We had fake guns. We had a dolly. It was a whole about our bank robber scene where we're coming to the space and I get killed because I'm not a good person. It was like,
that's like a production value there.
Yeah, like a little mini Western, right?
Yeah.
The guy who was directing it had lines, had a lot of lines. He was the third character. He comes in as with his son. We even had a little kid in the thing. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
He couldn't learn his lines. Oof. He couldn't say his lines. And we kept running it, and we kept running it. And I mean, I'm talking about hours, dude, to the point where I was getting frustrated. Like, I was like, dude... Like, the scene is, like, you have to learn your lines. Like, so I pulled him aside. So let me help you run the line. But this guy had no training, right? Yeah. I mean, have you ever worked with anybody who has zero training? Like, the ability to not comprehend, like, how to memorize? Like, okay, so this word ends with an M. So the next word starts with an M. So you should be able to connect and think Mary Mouse, right? So you, now the, you know, you start doing weird...
I don't, yeah.
To connect. anything to help some dude's memory, right?
I mean, other than repetition, I really don't have any skills to learn lines. I just repeat them. I don't know.
Yeah, but you have a skill, right?
I don't have any tricks. It's just repetition.
Right, but your body's been trained. Your mind has been trained where you have.
Right, no, but we're talking about it. It's just, I've just done it a million times now.
That you're going to memorize the lines. When you have no talent and have never done it, it's impossible. What I should have done is the story I heard about Dustin Hoffman. I should have grabbed the script, stuck it on my face, right? And said, just read the script.
Cue cards, baby.
And have the camera right on him and have him read it. Right?
That's it. Cue cards. That's it.
There's a story of Dustin Hoffman. I forgot.
Read cue cards.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's the Dustin? We should wrap up here soon, but tell the Dustin Hoffman story.
His first really decent job was on a soap opera. And I forgot. Can't remember the name of the actor. But it was a very well-known soap opera actor that everyone wanted to work with. And he got a job on set to work with him. And he apparently was an alcoholic, right? Oh. But he was really, really excited about working with this actor. I got to find the name of him. I've heard Dustin Hoffman tell the story. So when he gets on set, apparently the actor goes, he was drunk, and he goes, "Nice to meet you." And he's like, you know, Hoffman is all eager, "Nice to meet you, sir." And I'm so thrilled. He goes, "Okay, great." The guy, because he was an alcoholic, would never learn his line. So he grabbed his side and he stuck him on Dustin Hoffman's face. And he goes, "Nice to meet you, kid." I said, "Now don't move as we do the scene." And the guy basically read Dustin Hoffman's face with the lines. And then when it was his turn, he would take the script off. And then they would flip it. And then he said, "Nice to meet you." That was so funny because I just thought, you know, could you imagine? It'd be like, you know, getting on set with, you know, Al Pacino. And you're like, "Oh, my God, you know, I'm on set with Al Pacino, you know." And he's like, "Nice to meet you, Foster. Don't move."
Boom.
Just stay there. So,
oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, so, I don't know. What do you think? So what's the one, before we kind of get off, what's the one thing you're going to, we should tell this kid if he watches this?
I mean, you know, I thought long and hard about that. And I say this to any group of young actors or young people in the business. It's like, really know the why. Really know why you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, really drill down and have an answer to that question. Why are you doing this? And if the answer is somewhere around, I love it for whatever, you know, X, Y, and Z reason.
That's fair.
I just think that a lot of times, like I said, people like, well, I really, you know, I love it. I love being in this, right? I love being a part of this thing. And they don't really get into, well, what do they have to offer it? What's the art in you? You know, what do you have to bring to this? Why are you doing this? I don't know. I try to get them to think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And a fair answer is I like telling stories. That's a fair answer, right? You know, if you say, I just love telling stories. Well, that's
people have never thought about that kind of stuff. Oh, why am I doing this? Oh, I don't know. I've never thought about it. Well, yeah, just think about it. Just come up with an answer. I mean, there is an answer in there. Just, you know, think about it.
Yeah, but
I love telling stories. Like you're saying, I love telling stories. Without this, I would be an alcoholic. I'd be dead, you know.
Be dead. And then say, and if any of your two answers come to, I want to be rich and I want to be famous, then you should immediately, let me sing you a song. Mama,
yes.
Let your boys grow up to be actors.
Yeah, maybe think about running a hedge fund, maybe.
Yeah, be a rancher. You're near A&M, you know, be a rancher. You know, it's a great opportunity. Rancher.
Yeah, your dad's a cop, be a cop, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. What would you say? Is that what you said? Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, I think that's a great question to ask him, Foss. And then I would say, I would personally test him. I always do that because then you know how serious somebody is, right?
Test him with like an assignment, like
no
10 monologues.
Yeah. Say, hey.
That is a high bar, by the way, 10 monologues.
No, I mean, but you could do three.
Three would be more where I would, three.
But you're going to be blown away how many people won't even learn three. How many people won't even learn one?
One, right?
They're like, well, what do you mean? No, this guy is going to take me out to LA. I'm going to do film and TV. I don't want to do that theater stuff. And so when you get that answer, you're like, okay, well, good luck.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you're only invested in seeing yourself successful in the art, not really exploring the art in yourself, learning acting on any real level.
Yeah.
I agree. All right. Well, I think we've done it. We've given this kid, hopefully, some good advice.
Yeah. All right. Next one.